Hi, I'm Perry, and you're listening to The Beauty Brains. Hello, and welcome to The Beauty Brains, a show where real cosmetic chemists answer your beauty product questions and give you an insider's look at the cosmetic industry. This is episode 280. I'm your host, Perry Romanowski, and with me today, all the way on the other side of the country, Valerie George. Hello, Valerie.
Hi, Perry.
You're on the West Coast there, right? Or the other side of the coast?
I think they also call that the Best Coast, but I think that's a personal opinion to some people, maybe.
What do we call it in Chicago? The Second Coast or something?
I don't think anyone calls it that.
Our coast is a big lake.
Yeah.
All right, that's right. It's a second city. Although L.A.'s a second city now. I think we slipped a third.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Valerie, on today's show, we're going to answer some questions. Specifically, we'll be covering our thoughts about carboxytherapy, whether tanning waters work, whether you can apply too much vitamin C topically, and can you protect your hair by taking shorter showers? Be interesting to hear your thoughts on that. But first, Valerie, out there in California, they had a little thing called Suppliers Day. How did that go?
We sure did. That is our biennial show, meaning every other year, where suppliers, ingredient suppliers, or maybe manufacturers or testing companies display their wares, and chemists descend upon the show in utter madness. I'm just kidding. We were pretty orderly. But anyway, it's just an opportunity for people to get out of the labs, out of the office, and just see what people have, connect. And I had a lot of fun. You know, obviously we haven't had the show in a couple years. So for me, it was really great to just be with the team and, you know, go to the booths, get our free tchotchkes.
I always like the little candies.
Yeah. Oh, spatulas, timers, bags, sure. All that kind of stuff. So anyway, no, just in all seriousness, it was so good to just get out and see other people and interact and laugh and go to dinner. And yeah, it was a great time.
It's been a while. Now, that show is traditionally very crowded. How did the crowd look during this time of the pandemic?
It was actually pretty busy. I don't think as busier in previous years, a lot of booths actually. It was a bit smaller of a show than before.
Yeah.
And a lot of companies just didn't attend or didn't exhibit, but, you know, they came and walked the show anyway. So it was really nice. Not as busy as years prior, but definitely very good.
Well, I know they always have a good party after the first day.
Yeah.
I haven't gone to that. Well, those cosmetic chemists, they can party.
Yeah, especially the fragrance companies. But anyway, we won't talk about that.
Absolutely. So if you're in the cosmetic industry, you certainly want to check out Suppliers Day in California. And they're actually going to have one in New York coming up in November.
Coming up, yep.
Well, you know, Valerie, last weekend...
You ran a marathon, right?
I did run the marathon.
How'd that go?
Well, mostly ran the marathon. Well, you know, some days you got it and some days you don't. I actually had a decent time as far as regular people go. And I did win the juggling division.
How many people juggled the marathon?
Well, just me. But hey, that's first place.
Did you get a lot of looks?
Oh, the crowd was what made the whole thing the best. You know, the cheers you get as a juggler in a marathon are just delightful. And, you know, of course, Since I had decided early on that I was not going to set a personal record, a PR, so then I just started playing up to the crowd, doing tricks and stuff. So I had fun with it. It was a little hot and humid and windy, which is surprising for October. But
yeah, I was going to say,
know, I only dropped the ball two times.
That's impressive.
Yeah, and I finished in 3 hours and 49 minutes, which is all right, I suppose, as far as marathons go.
I think that's pretty good. I had a team member, a former team member of mine, Lily, who ran the marathon. She didn't see you.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, that was my 43rd marathon. It was my original goal to do 44. So I really only have one more to do for my goal.
And which one are you going to do?
I might do the Austin Marathon in February, but we'll see.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
What's going on with Porch Kitty, by the way? I have a friend and fan of the Beauty Brains podcast, Lisa,
yeah.
and she wanted to know, or said I should recommend a book to The Lion in the Living Room. And she has thought about Porch Kitty in that book.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. She said it might change your relationship with him.
Oh.
Or her. Yeah.
Well, it is definitely a her because she has had kittens.
She had
and
the litter.
I can report. She's had her second litter of kittens. At least I think so, because she sort of was gone a couple of days, and she came back, and she looked a little skinnier. So I'm gathering that she probably had the kittens.
You have to find them.
Well, I actually know where they are. There's this locked-up garage that's kind of where all these alley cats live. God, it must smell inside that garage. But
yeah, I was just thinking, like, oh, man.
At least there are the cold, right? So I think that's probably where the kittens are. We'll see. You know, actually, she's come into my house a few times.
That's great.
But,
you know, we had one of our Beauty Brains fans write us a really lovely email on how to interact with the cats. Have you taken any of that advice?
I have taken all of that advice. I actually have a little shelter set up, and yeah, I have it all set up. So, you know. That's my relationship with my outdoor cat.
Oh. Oh, my God.
Well, that was just an update on Porch Kitty. So why don't we do an update on beauty science news? What'd you see this week?
The FTC puts companies on notice for fake reviews,
Whoa.
Misleading endorsements. They are not having any of it. And it wasn't just a couple companies. It was more than 700 companies, including many in the cosmetics, beauty, and personal care industry, as well as many others as well.
Yeah, that's a lot of people. Now, they made it a point to say these companies aren't in trouble. They're just saying, hey, don't do that.
Yeah, our eyes are on you. But it could lead to trouble if they continue to engage that type of behavior. So, of course, the first thing I did was zoomed over there to see if the company I work for by day is listed on there or not, which feels pretty good, especially because some of our competitors are listed on there. That felt pretty neat. But it's a pretty extensive list because when you have a false review or misleading endorsement, they consider that deceptive and unfair conduct. And the Federal Trade Commission does not tolerate that. So this is a warning to these companies.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, it's not an indication that they've done anything wrong, but they're saying, you're on our list and we're going to check it twice if we have the funding.
Yeah.
Just kidding. They didn't put that. But.
Yeah, no, but Apple's is on this list. And so is Applebee's restaurant. So, you know, my wife is obsessed with that stupid Applebee's song. You know,
this
song?
Oh, no.
It's like date night, Applebee's.
No.
I'm like, oh my God, this
yeah.
song again. And
yeah.
she's doing the whole commercial dance. But funny thing is, she hates Applebee's. It, like,
they're on her mind. Yeah. But no,
they,
I mean, there's lots of companies on here. So, today being at Sephora, you know, I broke my phone. I've had two root canals in the last 2 weeks. The second one was Friday night. So Saturday morning, I was in a foul mood and getting my phone repaired. And I went into Sephora and was just reviewing all the claims that companies were making. And it's just, even just existing around Los Angeles this weekend, it's like, wow, marketing is everywhere. And it sucks.
Well, it makes most of the world go around,
I
suppose, at least the capitalistic world.
Well, if you're one of those 700 companies, you might not be in trouble, but you are being watched. So be good.
Yeah. And if you're like a up and coming beauty podcaster, you know, you can't just say whatever you want if you're getting paid by a company.
Exactly.
Well, I saw a story that reminded me of you because it's right in your wheelhouse. The FDA has finally banned lead acetate from consumer hair dyes. The FDA originally banned it in 2018, but they sort of paused that ruling because there were some objections, and they allowed for like a public hearing. But now the agency has finally said, all right, lead acetate has been disallowed from hair dyes starting January of 2022. Now, why is this lead acetate been in hair dyes this long anyway? Oh, hair dye expert in the country.
Well, it's not typically used in most hair dyes, but it's used in a lot of hair dyes for men, maybe that have this gradual or progressive dyeing where it dyes over time. I have never formulated with it. It's a very antiquated technology. And of course, you know, a lot of people want to jump on the bandwagon and say, we've never used lead acetate. And really, most companies don't have a reason to use it except for, you know, a few of the hair color companies in that progressive dyeing business. I will say the focus really should be on the fact that, you know, the FDA has gotten information on a product that has said, you know what, it's probably not the safest thing to be using, and we want to impose some restrictions on it. And that, I think, is pretty cool and just goes to show that at any moment, data can come up on anything, and the FDA is going to make it a safer place.
Yeah, because that hair dye system has been around, at least since the 40s or the 50s, right,
for a
long time.
Yeah, and there's other salts that can be used to dye in this way as well. Lead acetate is just one of them. And of course, the bad thing about it is lead, right? And so I think, you know, these safety data have come up about potential toxicity issues, and now they're restricting it.
Yeah, I kind of think this is not really based on new safety data. It's just, you know, the word lead is in there. There's a lot of pressure to remove lead from everything. And since there are other options pretty easily available, it's not hard to ban an ingredient because most people don't use it anyway.
No, not at all.
All right. Are we ready for some beauty questions? We've got a few.
Let's do them.
Our first question comes to us from a patron, Sarah. Thank you for being a patron. And if you want to support the Beauty Brains and keep those pesky commercials and marketing off the show, just go to patreon.com/thebeautybrains and subscribe. Sarah says, what are your thoughts on carboxytherapy? Had you heard of carboxytherapy
before? It is actually a treatment I have not heard of.
Wow. Well, yeah. It is apparently all the rage.
Well, I don't think so if I haven't heard of it. I'm just kidding. But anyway, some people are interested, I guess, if they're asking the question.
Sure. Well, carboxytherapy is it's a treatment that's supposed to be for cellulite, stretch marks, acne scars, and under-eye circles. And the idea is that you take these micro needles and you inject carbon dioxide into the skin in the hopes that it's going to increase blood circulation. Now, you know, when you breathe, you breathe in oxygen and you breathe out carbon dioxide. And I think
unless you're a plant.
Right. But I think like when you hyperventilate into like a bag or something and then you just start sucking in too much carbon dioxide, and that sort of changes the amount of oxygen that gets injected in your blood from the hemoglobin. And so it is actually demonstrated that a buildup of carbon dioxide in your blood can sort of increase the speed of circulation through the capillaries and veins in certain areas. So,
but too much will kill you. I would just like to point that out to everyone. But keep going, Perry. Right.
Yes, exactly. But these treatments, of course, are not injecting too much into your blood. It's just very targeted areas. The idea also is that carbon dioxide can in some way reduce adipose tissue, which is why it's used for stretch marks and cellulite or anti-cellulite treatments. So I looked at like review articles and whatever I could find on this this therapy. It's something done by dermatologists, and I think spas. Now, you'll see that it's FDA approved, and often a company will say FDA approved when they're trying to imply that it's FDA endorsed, meaning that it's been proven effective. But often when a treatment is FDA approved, it just means it's not going to kill you. So it's been approved for safety. That's kind of how remember that Hair Max, there's this laser comb.
Yep.
They always advertise it's supposed to grow your hair and it's FDA approved. the approved part is just that it's safe, that it's not going to harm you. And that's the same kind of approval that this carboxy therapy is, because since your body already has carbon dioxide in it and this is not injecting a huge amount, it's very unlikely to have any kind of negative health effects. But the truth is that there aren't a lot of good studies that show this treatment has much benefit. This is, you know, just one of those things where it has a plausible technological story, but in practice, does it really work? Well, for something like, you know, dark circles, the idea is that if you treat right on the dark circles, and if you could improve the microcirculation, then that's going to remove the blood or the visible blood, and then that's going to make the circles go away. Of course, this implies that microcirculation is what's causing dark circles on the eye, and really, it's more often caused by the fact that the skin is thinner there, and you can just see the circulatory system under the skin. And so, whether you speed up circulation or not, it's not actually going to help. And actually, what could happen is, like, when you eject this air in those spots, you could actually be stretching the skin to some extent. And then that's going to potentially lead to more wrinkles. So,
but then the spa can generate more revenue because they can use more Botox and fillers. Just throwing out that conspiracy theory there.
That's possible too. Now, there was a small study. They had like 16 people, and they looked at fat reduction as a treatment using carboxy therapy as a treatment. And they showed that it had a small positive effect after like 1 week of doing this, but that effect didn't last. And so if you're saying, oh, I could do carboxy therapy instead of liposuction, no, it's not a permanent fix. It's not going to last that long. So I guess my thoughts are that, you know, this is not going to work nearly as well as it's advertised. And it's probably based on the pricing of it, because this was like $75 a treatment, and then you got to go for like a dozen treatments before you see any effects.
And then it only lasts for a week, at least according to this study. Yeah, definitely a hard pass for me.
Yeah, there aren't any good studies showing it's effective, and the studies that are available don't show it's a very big effect. So, I'm not a huge fan, and it doesn't sound like Valerie is either.
Well, not enough to try it, so...
Well, unless there's a carboxy therapy company who wants to give a free trier.
Yeah, I'll take a coupon.
There you go. All right, how about our next question from Bailey?
Bailey asks, "Hi, Beauty Brains. I love your podcast. I am an esthetician student, so it's refreshing to hear answers that aren't all marketing. I recently bought a tanning water and have heard good things from friends and the internet. I'm wondering how and if tanning water works, or did I just buy into a scam? Thanks so much, and I appreciate what y'all do. Best, Bailey."
Have you heard of tanning water?
Yeah, they're not a new product type on the market, and the important thing to remember when you are applying a self-tanning product to your skin, it probably is using conventional technology, which is typically dihydroxyacetone and erythrolose, which has a similar effect.
In fact, I looked up one from Isle of Paradise, a tanning water, and the third ingredient, dihydroxyacetone, and then about the sixth ingredient,
erythrolose.
Yeah. So they're both in there.
This is super old chemistry. These are two compounds that react via a reaction we call the Maillard reaction, which is where these molecules complex with proteins in the skin or amino acids within the skin, because your skin is keratin, which is a protein which is made of amino acids. And so these molecules bind and create a color shift. And this color shift can be likened to turning white sugar into caramel. Very similar reaction going on. So it's nothing new. And in fact, this Isle of Paradise tanning water is just one example that's employing this chemistry that's been around from the 60s. And it's pretty standardized chemistry. It's just water-based. Other companies will also make oil-based tanning products, but they're also still just using dihydroxyacetone. dihydroxyacetone we call DHA. It's very finicky to work with. It has a lot of formulation parameters. Like, basically, there's so many things you can't do in a formulation. There's just like a list of rules. And it's like, okay, if you're going to formulate a self-tanner, you just have to follow these 11 rules or whatever.
Yeah.
And you'll have a stable product. Like, you literally almost can't use anything with it except for something to enhance the penetration, like maybe a propylene glycol or an ethoxy diglycol, which Isle of Paradise uses. So you didn't get scammed. You're just buying a product that right. has really conventional chemistry. And the cool thing is it really, really works. And if you're loving yeah. how your skin looks and what the tone is coming out to, keep using it. You definitely did not get ripped off. And I actually really like the Isle of Paradise products.
I should point out that while it's called a tanning water, it's not actually tanning your skin. Now, it is changing the color of your skin, but in a different way than tanning. When you tan, you actually stimulate the production of melanin, and that is what's responsible for tanning. But this is a different reaction. It's not actually tanning. It's just making your skin brown, or if it's formulated poorly, just orange.
You know, Perry, you say color, I say color spelled with a U. I think we're talking the same thing. Ideally, it would be called a self-tanning water, and then it would be right. a little more succinct to how it works.
But yeah. But I was just, it's just tan. I mean, I guess tan, if you call tanning just the coloring effect, then it is. It's just different than the sunlight that tanning that you're getting.
Said by somebody who is not buying self-tanning products.
No, I'm specifically just talking about the chemistry. And one other thing about DHA is it's a very difficult ingredient to cover the odor on. So the odor on these products is often a challenge.
I actually don't mind the odor. I don't know what people are complaining about. I really enjoy it. It has just a very starchy smell. I like
graham
it.
Graham crackery.
I like the way I smell. So
it's a polarizing odor. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
How about we get to Emma's question? Emma, she's from Patreon too. Thanks for being a patron. Emma says, "Hi, I use high quality ascorbic acid serum every morning, specifically the SkinCeuticals CE Ferulic Acid.
Ooh.
I know I'm getting my RDA of vitamin C through my diet. Good. My question is, can too much vitamin C applied to the skin be pro-oxidant to the skin? So is the vitamin C in her skincare actually bad for her?"
So I think what Emma means is vitamin C is an antioxidant. Is it ever in a state where it can be a pro-oxidant, actually cause oxidation?
Right. And I had heard this before. Now, the idea that vitamin C is a pro-oxidant, the first place I saw it mentioned was in a paper published in Nature back in 1998. I wasn't reading it in 1998, but that's where the paper came from. But here, the researchers found that for people who took 500 milligram vitamin C supplements, they actually saw an increase in pro-oxidant damage versus a placebo and versus how their skin was initially before the study. Now, the recommended level for vitamin C is, say, about 95 milligrams a day. So this study essentially looked at about five times the recommended daily allowance. And it is also... this was a 500 milligrams of supplements, so it was an ingested product. If you're using over, they only saw this effect with 500 milligrams of vitamin C. Less, they didn't see as much of an effect. So there seems to be some threshold where it can start to have pro-oxidant effects. Now, according to your skincare, I looked at the SkinCeuticals products, and they say to use 4 or 5 drops a day. Now, according to them, that was it's a 15% vitamin C product.
Yep.
And it comes in a third or a 1 ounce container, so about 30 milligrams.
Wouldn't that be 30 grams?
Right. You're right. 30 grams. Right. So if you look at this, that would be about 600 drops. Right. So a drop has some certain measure. And so if you look at that many per drops, you're looking at about 7.5 milligrams per drop, or about 37 milligrams per application. So even if your body absorbed that 37 milligrams, that would only, and you're using the RDA of vitamin C, you know, you're still less than 150 milligrams total. So, you know, that's assuming all of the stuff that you put on your skin gets into your body. And we know that that isn't true. But even if you did, there's just not enough vitamin C in there to have any kind of effect on your vitamin C levels.
And at 4,500 milligrams of a container, you basically would have to use almost 10% or a little more than 10% of the container to get that 500 milligram vitamin C amount that was found in the Nature paper. So you'd have to take 10% of that bottle, which, by the way, is about $16.60 worth of product. Last time I checked, I think that product's worth over $160. And you'd have to do that every day. And then all of that would have to go into your bloodstream to equate what was happening in the Nature study. And that's just not going to happen from a dosing effect. And the fact not all of it penetrates and not all of it becomes bioavailable either. Some of it gets tied up in other stuff.
So the bottom line is, like, even if you're using a 20% vitamin C product, there's just not enough in your products to make a substantial impact on your skin in a pro-oxidant kind of way.
Yeah. And that being said, I also don't think you can eat your way to good skin with vitamin C. And that is because, you know, when you ingest it, not all of it is taken up into your system. And it's not intelligent being like, hey, body, don't use me for anything like gums so you don't get scurvy. Right. Just go right to the skin. It's just not an intelligently done system, our bodies and vitamin C. So continue to use vitamin C in your skincare if you enjoy it like I do.
Absolutely.
Gosh, that is a popular product, Perry. Have you heard of that product before? The SkinCeuticals CE formula? Yeah.
I have. I think we actually covered it on a previous show.
Many and episodes,
If I was a better podcaster, I would go back and tell you what that was. But, you know, we're scientists or just play podcasters when I'm in my closet.
Exactly.
but, yeah, you go back. We have covered this topic before. Valerie loves it.
Yep.
Looks like we got time for one more question.
All right. Susanna says, hi, guys. In a recent episode, you mentioned that water is damaging to hair. I think Valerie mentioned something about soaking hair in water overnight and it turning horrible. How quick is this process? Can I protect my hair somewhat or completely by taking shorter showers, or is hair damaged the instant it touches water? Is there a known time limit for how long you can safely shower without damaging your hair? And is hot or lukewarm water worse than cold? Regards from Sweden.
Well, water is definitely a problem. I think that might have been me talking about soaking hair in water overnight.
I think I've talked about it before, too, in
studies
that I've done. Yeah, when you do some, you know, just general hair tress studies. And I think in general, anytime anything is on your hair, the more time, the more penetration that you have. But I think in the case of water, a shower, I think, is sufficient enough to just wet your hair. And that's really all you need. I think if you stayed under running water for a significant amount of time and you're extending the time that your hair is in contact with water, it would be no different than swimming in a pool or the ocean or, you know, being out in the rain and keeping your hair sopping wet. I just think, you know, when your hair is wet, it's wet. Unless your hair is, you know, healthy virgin hair. And they always say you can't wet a healthy hair. But anyway, no, I mean, I think just once your hair is saturated with water, that's really it.
Yeah, it's kind of like a sponge, right? And you get a sponge wet, it'll get as wet as it can get, and then it won't get any wetter.
Exactly.
It can only hold so much water.
Exactly. And is hot or lukewarm water worse than cold? I would say definitely. I think it's worse than cold water in terms of propensity for hair damage. I don't have any actual studies or statistics behind that. That's just what I think my experience is. And I think part of it has to do with some of the lipid content on hair. It has to do with maybe the rate of hair swelling, but that would be really interesting to analyze. But I do think, just like your skin, a general rule of thumb is lukewarm is better than super hot. I would also agree with that statement for hair.
Yeah. Yeah. That's been my experience too. I've never done, the only study I've done kind of related to that was when I was doing tress work with colored hair and trying to create a product that would keep the color in longer. And I think we were able to draw more color out of the hair using warm water versus cold water.
Exactly. And I think that has to do with the rate at which these water molecules are moving when water's hot versus cold. The one thing I will say about cold water is that I think it can be difficult to rinse product out of hair with cold water. I think it's a little more difficult to do that, to solubilize whatever you have, whether it's shampoo or styling product or conditioner. And so I think then you kind of have to like keep rinsing your hair with water, or maybe you step out of the shower and you still have like residue on your hair. And I think that's bad too. So I probably wouldn't worry about it and just, not keep your hair or water piping hot and stick to lukewarm, and you should be fine. But there's not really a known time limit for how long you can safely shower.
All right. To this question, can you protect your hair by taking shorter showers?
I don't know that the benefit that you would see would be noticeable by a consumer.
I would agree. Maybe we could show in the lab, but I think once you get your hair wet, that's the damage is done. Or the damage that's going to happen, unless you kept getting it wet for, 15 minutes versus 1 minute.
Yeah, yeah, and then dry it, yeah.
Right. 1 minute versus 5 minutes, I don't think that's going to matter.
It's one of our thoughts of wisdom. Once your hair's wet, it's wet.
It's wet.
Oh, man.
Yeah, indeed. Oh, well, with that bit of wisdom, I think we can bring the show to a close.
Thanks again for listening, everybody.
Hey, the Beauty Brains are on Patreon, as we mentioned. If you're interested in supporting the show and keeping us ad-free, you don't want to have to hear me talk about something like Bomba socks, do you? Just go over to patreon.com/thebeautybrains and subscribe.
If you get a chance, please go over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the show and leave us a review. That is going to help other people find the show and ensure we have a full docket of beauty questions to answer for you.
Speaking of beauty questions, if you have a question, just hit record on your smartphone and then email that to thebeautybrains@gmail.com. We always enjoy getting your voice on the show.
Also, don't forget to follow us on our various social media accounts. On Instagram, we're at thebeautybrains2018. On Twitter, we're at thebeautybrains. We have a Facebook page and a TikTok, but we're, going to get lessons from our tween friends. So once we figure out how to use it, we'll share the handle.
Right, exactly. I think it's the Beauty Brains 1. So there you go. The number 1, actually.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again for listening, everyone. And remember, be brainy about your beauty.
Thanks, everyone.
Kittens!